because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go. God
bless you. I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, Wisconsin's Eye Summary, summary of this week in the Capitol. Breaking news comes first, J.R. Within the last 2 hours, Right Wisconsin reported it. You reported it. WisPolitics reported it. An extraordinary session being called by Speaker Voss and Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald. Mm-hmm. Right to work next week. So fill in the details. What have you learned so far?
Well, we should see the bill sometime this afternoon. Fitzgerald's not returning our calls yet, but he's doing kind of a talk radio tour, if you will.
Yeah.
And on one show, he said it'll be a clean bill. That means no carve-outs for any unions. That was a big issue before. He says he has, quote-unquote, 17 rock-solid votes.
Yep.
And they're going to go next week. It looks like it'll go to the Labor Committee first, which would probably meet on Tuesday. They could be on the floor on Wednesday and pass a bill. Now the question is, how quickly will the Assembly move? They have more leeway, if you will, in the Assembly. There are 63 members there. The vast majority seem to be on board with Right to Work and have no qualms about it. So their attitude seems to be, well, Senate passes it, we'll take it up. But
why,
they go first.
Why now?
Why now? Good question. Fitzgerald said this morning he'd heard rumors or had some tip that the anti-Right to Work people were going to target his members with TV ads. He didn't want to lose that. There had been a sentiment that Fitzgerald would wait until Dewey Strobel was seated in the 20th. Now,
in April,
he still has a write-in candidate on the ballot in the 20th, but it's a heavily Republican seat. You're talking about a write-in. It's Dewey is going to be the next state senator from the 20th district. So he is in line to do that. It gives you an extra vote. You've already got Petroski off the bill.
Mm-hmm.
So the thought was, give yourself an extra cushion. But Fitzgerald said, if you got the votes, you do it. And he's got them right now. So go.
And moments ago, the governor's office told you what?
They will sign the bill. Governor, it's been fascinating. Governor Walker said what for months? Doing Right to Work would be a distraction right now. Let's not take it up. All of a sudden now, he's saying, hey, last 2 weeks, what's he been saying? Well, I meant that my focus was the budget. Like, these are my priorities, but I'm not opposed to Right to Work. Now it's, I'll sign the bill. I think the train is coming, and they realize they can't stop it. Probably realized that a while ago. Also, you look nationally with the presidential campaign that he's kind of mounting or building. It would look bad for Governor Walker to sell himself as a real conservative, but then turn around and veto Right to Work or try and stand in the way of this bill that a lot of conservatives say is a big deal for business development. So it's either get on board or get knocked over.
Well, final question. Do you look for a repeat of mass Act 10 type protests next week when the Senate debates it?
It's hard to know. We've been calling unions this morning to see what the reaction is going to be, but they don't have the resources they used to have. They still have people, not as many members, but they still have, you know, folks who can show up. But can they mount that kind of an effort? Can you mobilize that many people? I mean, remember, too, public employees have already lost collective bargaining powers, right? So teachers, will they be inspired, if you will, to come down the Capitol and shut down schools for a couple of days? I don't know that that passion is there.
And you just reported today that three ASME unions are now going to merge?
They posted on their blog last night. I mean, honestly, I had not heard about this at all, but the three councils that represent state employees, local employees outstate, and then the local employees in Milwaukee County, they have all merged into one council. Council 23, I think it is, or 32, because they're after the year they were formed in Wisconsin. It's really a sign of how the unions have shrank.
Mm-hmm.
They were a big player in politics when I got here 15 years ago.
Absolutely.
And now they're shell their former selves.
And as you just
merging.
Said, ASME started here, and now ASME is pulling in its resources and merging.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you alluded to every week we seem to be talking about the additional steps that Governor Walker is making towards the presidential campaign. I was struck by his Megyn Kelly moment this week, JR, because the issue was, do presidents have to have a college degree? And here's what he said. That's the kind of elitist, government knows best, top-down approach from Washington we've heard from years. We've had an Ivy League-trained lawyer in the White House for at least for the last 6 years who was pretty good at reading it off the teleprompter but done a pretty lousy job leading this country. I'd rather have a fighter, e.g. him. Does he help himself on college degrees and evolution?
Well, it's interesting is that the critics of Governor Walker on these issues have really kind of given him a softball, if you will, knock out of the park. I mean, when Howard Dean's going on the air saying that Governor Walker is unknowledgeable because they have a degree, it does sound elitist. And let's be honest, what, three-fourths of the public doesn't have a college degree?
60% of adults
like
do not, yeah.
So it's like you're saying everybody else who doesn't have a degree is stupid. Now, you can make an argument that by having a degree, you have proven a certain set of knowledge or you can complete something, but as far as being president, I don't know it's a prerequisite these days. And it's more that the critics kind of like, they fall over themselves to go after Scott Walker and they go too far. Like protesting his house this week, even Jen Schilling and Jennifer Schilling and Peter Barker said, I don't know I'm okay
not
with
the best
that.
Tactic.
A little bit too much. So when you do stuff like this, it actually helps him knock down the argument and make him look like the better person in the process.
Right. His appearance on Megyn Kelly wasn't the only thing that happened. He's added more, staff advisors?
He's got foreign policy advisors, domestic policy advisors, New Hampshire people. I mean, the operation is building.
Wow.
Let's be honest. Governor Walker is running for president. It is kind of, a facade to say, we're thinking about it. He is in. And this is part of the buildup. And he's done a very good job of building in key states like Iowa, New Hampshire, getting people in place who've got good reputations to launch this thing. The only issue for him is don't peak too soon. It's still a year away. Don't, keep that buzz going.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think neither the House nor session was in session last week. So my nominee for the most emotional and dramatic moment was the Menominee tribe finishing their walk to the Capitol. It was kind of a trail of tears walk because they wanted the governor to overturn his decision against the Kenosha casino. So Chairman Gary Bisaw walks up to the governor's office, respectfully asks, and is turned away. Then he comes back, and let's take a few seconds to listen to what Chairman Gary Bisaw told that rally that had the Capitol rocking.
Governor Walker, you had stated you doubted these offers are real. But let me say this, Governor. The bond is real. This project is real, and real Menominee people and real Wisconsin citizens have made a real 156-mile journey in double negative wind chills to request this meeting with you.
But JR, yesterday was a deadline. Mm-hmm. That casino is dead for Kenosha, Wisconsin.
Yes.
Now, it's interesting, though, some of the things we learned this week, I just want to highlight three. The governor's letter released a letter saying the Menominee tribe wanted 90-mile zone of...
no casinos means Noble White.
Yeah.
Ho-Chunk.
Right. And it said, if there is another casino improvement within 90 miles, we're not going to pay anything to the state. That was new. Secondly, Gary Bisaw went on the Devil's Advocate show saying last fall in October we offered him $100 million towards the Bucks arena. I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. But in his Monday letter to Bisaw, Governor Walker said in 18 months of talks with Secretary Hipsch, quote, the Menominee never seriously discussed providing funding for a Bucks arena. Who's right, JR?
We're in the he said she said of negotiations, so it's tough to say who's really right. But the reality is that Governor Walker made up his mind a long time ago. If you look at the original criteria he set up, agreement from all the tribes, which never was going to happen, no expansion of gaming, was never going to happen, local support, which was there, how could he actually approve the casino? Now, he says he's looking for a win-win-win. If you're a cynic, you think Scott Walker put this off till after the gubernatorial election because he wanted to keep Racine and Kenosha County as fertile territory for votes. He knew it might hurt him. Now, again, that's a cynical view about things, but now that it's over, all these lawmakers from Racine and Kenosha County are saying, hey, we need this, and he's saying no. No, it wasn't serious. It wasn't real. Well, if it wasn't real 18 months ago, then why'd you wait? I mean, I guess it's kind of the question. But Scott Walker, you've covered longer than I have. Have you ever seen him change his mind and
no.
say I was wrong?
No, and I'm reminded of his decision on the high-speed trains.
Mm-hmm.
And he never looked back on that.
No.
He made a controversial decision, said, $800 million in federal dollars? No, because the long-term cost. So I compare that to that.
Unless he could have gotten the Pottawatomie and Ho-Chunk both on board, I couldn't see how he would get to a yes, and they weren't getting there.
Yeah.
So add that in. Plus, once he said no a couple weeks ago, went to Iowa, there was no way he's going to turn back and say, you know what, on second thought, let's do this. There's just no way.
Chairman Bisaw told the radio show that they're looking at all the options, which I assume could mean a lawsuit.
Mm-hmm.
And he also said the possibility that the tribe would grow some marijuana or marijuana products on the reservation, but he did not. That just fell into all the options.
Well, that's an interesting debate. It is, sovereign nation. What can be done? They haven't really pushed that, but that's been mentioned before. Yeah.
Yeah. Meanwhile, the states of Colorado legalized marijuana, mm-hmm. so Anyway, topic three. The governor shuffled his cabinet deck, mm-hmm. and let's look at some playing cards. First of all, you had DOA Secretary Mike Hipsch presiding mm-hmm. over the Department of Administration.
Yep.
And now that the casino decision made and the budget is in the hands of the ledge, Mike Hipsch goes to the Public Service Commission.
Yep.
Bumping Commissioner Eric Callisto, longtime Democratic appointee, former top aide to Governor Jim Doyle. Mr. Hipsch will get $128,000. Was it surprising that Mike's going from DOA to PSC?
No, I heard that rumor for months. If you think about it, it's a nice landing spot for Hipsch. Unless you're named Jim Clouser, being DOA Secretary for 4 years is pretty rare the yes. last three decades. So Hipsch is a former lawmaker, not really from the private sector. So you think of a skill set, where would he land after DOA? PSC gives him a nice landing spot, also helps build his resume, if you will, so that once he leaves that spot, he could find a little bit more, or be a more attractive job candidate, if you will, for possibly utility, somebody else who's looking to, you know, have an interest in government. So it makes sense.
And I think I had Hipsch's salary wrong. He'll be getting $129,000. Getting $128,000 to be the new DOA
yes.
secretary is Scott Neitzel, former executive until he resigned last week at Madison Gas and Electric. Now, he's a former PSC commissioner.
Mm-hmm.
Did you hear the rumor that was Neitzel the first choice for Walker to run DOA back in 2011, JR?
There was a thought that Neitzel was too expensive at the time. Essentially, that Neitzel was doing very well at MG&E, and they couldn't really afford, he couldn't afford the pay cut to come. Because, I mean, it's really, for some of these top-notch people, you're talking about a big pay cut, I think.
I think he was getting like $534,000,
yes.
and he'll be getting $128,000.
Significant pay drop.
Right.
Now, so at this point, maybe he's made enough that he says, I can take it and go do this because he wants to serve government. We haven't talked to him yet to know for sure what the attraction is. But, yeah, he was rumored to be for a while to be the original pick or one of the original picks for DOA. And Hipsch, actually, what I had heard back in 2010 was he was going to be budget director to start. But then they couldn't find a DOA secretary, and Hipsch moved up the chain to yeah. secretary.
I was surprised. Kate Zeiske, and here's a mm-hmm. name we know because she was a former state representative.
Former state treasurer,
former revenue secretary. Mm-hmm. I think she ran for the U.S. Senate once, didn't she?
Possibly, yeah.
She's coming back as deputy secretary of the Department of Administration at a salary of $125,500. Does that appointment surprise you?
Interesting, but she's well liked, respected.
Yeah, she is.
So it makes a lot of sense in that regard. But it's about building a good team, and that's the thing that I heard from Walker's people about this whole process was, we want a good team in place of people who are competent and can work together. So once the deputy and assistant deputy left DOA, you kind of knew that there was going to be a whole turnover, if you will. Yeah, Zeiske's there. John Hogan, who used to be over at WIDA, before that was in Scott, back in the Fitzgerald's office some
right.
years ago.
Chief of staff for
He's assistant deputy secretary. That's the new team over at DOA to run the show.
And I surprised very easily in my old age, so mm-hmm. I was surprised that Kate's coming back. I was very surprised that Bob Seitz, mm-hmm. former chief of staff to State Senator Zien, then he goes off and he's a registered lobbyist for Gogebic Taconite. Mm-hmm. He's a spokesman for Gogebic Taconite. He's going to PSC at a salary of $112,000 as the executive assistant.
Mm-hmm.
What does that tell you? That Gogebic isn't serious about the mine?
It's a good question. You know what's going on. But we've seen for the last couple months stories about how they're changing the footprint of this mine, right? That it's too difficult because of all the wetlands up there.
And going they've dropped Ashland County, excuse me.
Going to smaller pockets rather than one big lawn. So it's proving possibly more difficult. I mean, sometimes you want to read the tea leaves and figure out, well, what's going on. So maybe that is a sign, but you have seen signs it's not going as well as they would have hoped for having this mine up and running by now.
And then
or so many soon, I should say.
My biggest surprise.
Yes.
Brian Schimming.
Mm-hmm.
Very entertaining guy.
Absolutely.
He's not going to be angry that we've got him kind of in the
Joker. I think he'll appreciate that, actually.
I think he'll appreciate it. Well, look at it. Vice chair of the State Republican mm-hmm. Party, part-time talk show host with Vicki McKenna in this market. He's going to be the acting director of WIDA at a salary of $128,000.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I was just stunned by this, given that Schimming is a very respected campaign strategist and advocate for GOP. He says he's going to give up the party. So this one really surprised me. Did it?
Yes.
Am I overreacting here?
But here's the question. What happens to WIDA after the merger? Now, Walker wants to put WIDA and WIDIC together.
Yeah.
And we haven't got an answer yet. Well, what happens to these jobs? He also had an appointment to WIDIC this way, just a week as well. What happens to those two positions once this thing is merged? Mm-hmm. Is Shimming a temporary placeholder? Is he going to be there long term? We don't know. And they haven't told us yet. We've asked, but haven't gotten an answer to that yet. What's it going to look like after this merger is done? By the way, I haven't seen the bill. It was supposed to be done separate of the budget. Now it's all in the budget. So there's that going on. It's still a little murky about what this merger is going to look like and what the final product will be.
Is the takeaway of all this card shuffling, JR, that the governor has put in place a team that won't surprise him when he's out on the campaign trail for president?
First key that Eric Shute is sticking around. I talked to Eric before.
He's Chief of Staff?
He's promised to stick on for a while. Essentially, the thought is that Eric is somebody that Walker can trust, that thinks, knows how Walker thinks, and when Walker's out running for president for the next year and a half, Shute can run the show, and Walker has full confidence in him, and then that's really what's driving. I think some of this is that, having people in place who he can trust, that while he's gone, it won't fall apart, if you will.
Biggest surprise of all these shuffles?
Shimming. Easily. So, okay. You know, because what was the complaint about Wiedek with some of the appointments? Well, these guys are partisan, hacks or whatever you want to call it, the knock, that they're being appointed to government jobs and business development and they're partisan people. Well, Shimming, I mean, he carries a partisan label. So you're going to get hit with that a little bit. But, I'm not saying that Brian can't do the job. It's just interesting from the perspective of picking a partisan to do this job in the administration.
Yeah, understand. Speaker Voss answered a question about a labor contract with the state troopers that was negotiated 2 years ago. Pay raises of 17%, and all of our reporting eyebrows went up. Mm-hmm. This is very, very intriguing. Governor Walker's OSER, Office of State Employee Relations, negotiated a contract with state troopers who say they haven't got a pay raise, what is it, since 2000?
5 years, not 2009?
2009.
June 2009, yeah.
Yeah, 17%. And if you go to the state trooper website, they pretty well document their starting wage of 1995 is way below the Fond du Lac police officer, a Dane County deputy, and their other table on their website shows after 8 years they make $20.50 an hour, which is way, way below a lot of other police law enforcement agencies. But now, Speaker Voss, Majority Leader Fitzgerald, Senate President Lozick says DOA, this contract is DOA. It's ironic, though, that Majority Leader Fitzgerald's dad runs a state patrol. So what strikes you about this?
One, it seems an issue for lawmakers is, look, you're talking about a 70% raise, it's 5 years, but if you kind of do really rudimentary math, that's a good boost every year, like 3%+ of those 5 years. That's a little bit higher, if you will, than other state employees who lost collective bargaining powers in 2011, who got a 1% raise in the last 2 years, are getting no raise in this budget, and pay higher health insurance and pension payments starting in 11 on top of everything else. They're going, wait a second, how can you justify a raise of this size for these folks? What's going on with those state employees? Now, the flip side is people will tell you, look, we train these state patrol folks to come out of the academy, they start the job, and people pick them off because we've trained them, they're ready to go. We can pay more money in these small villages and cities and towns. You know, it's a losing proposition to have people continually going out the door other places. So that's when the justification is at least for the size of the raise.
But here are some of the political questions being asked that you're well aware. Mm-hmm. If this contract was negotiated 2 years ago, why wasn't it sent to the ledge to be ratified before the election for governor?
Good Oops. Question. There's that. You know, what were lawmakers not happy about what they heard about the size of the contract? There's also the question, which the governor's office has hotly refuted, that there's being shown favoritism because this union has backed Walker in the past.
Right.
So lots of intrigue, if you will.
Before we get into the stock report, one more item. In a letter, in a press release this week, the co-chairs of finance, Senator Darling and Representative Nygren, criticized UW-Chancellor Blank for her for the way she is pushing back on the governor's plan to cut aid to the UW system. They were pretty critical of her.
Mm-hmm.
What's that a symbol of?
A couple of things. One, Republican lawmakers seem unhappy with the pushback about the authority and some of these other things, saying, look, if you go back just a couple of years ago or a few years ago, Betty Martin, she wanted to be cut off, spun off to public authority. She's
right.
Okay with this cut of $125 million. So what's going on that also now this is gloom and doom? There's that. There's also this dynamic where Ray Cross is the president of the UW system. There's a thought that he would build a better relationship with the Republicans in the legislature, if you will, and that he wanted to be closer with the governor, have some kind of relationship with him as opposed to past presidents. Hired Jim Villa, one of Walker's longtime confidants, be head of communications.
Yes.
It's not working. I mean, granted, you have Republicans saying, okay, the size of the cut may be too much. We might want to soften it. But if they thought they're getting a better deal, it's not happening right now. And you have this tension of Democrats saying, well, where's Ray Cross fighting the good fight? You know, this is a knife fight for your future of your system. Why isn't he like raising Cain and going crazy? Then you have Rebecca Blank, though, the one saying, hey, here's the stark choice you have of layoffs, all these other things, which then
layoffs starting in April
irritates lawmakers, Republicans saying, okay, wait a second, let's go back to this past argument about the authority. You get this freedom, you're okay. What's going on? So the building a better relationship, if you will, is not working right now.
Well, two and a half weeks after the governor announced this, where do you think it stands in the ledge? If you cap tuition, does it have a pretty good chance of passing?
Tell me after the May revenue estimates come in. That's the big
point.
Thing. Because Robin Voss keeps saying, not sure the cut's appropriate, maybe it's a little bit too high. But again, unless they can find more money for them, I don't know how they soften the blow. And there is that talk about a tuition cap. The worst case scenario continues to be the $300 million, no authority, and a tuition cap. And those, I'm not saying it's going to happen, but that is a possibility where we sit right now.
Right. Okay, time for the WisPolitics stock report. Rising.
Well, Dewey Strobel, almost assured of coming back to the legislature. Fascinating thing is that the run for Congress last year with Grothman and Libum, he spent $800,000 of his own money on a seat and ran this very negative campaign attacking Libum and Grothman as basically part of the problem. Came in a distant third. This time around, puts in less than $15,000 of his own money in the state Senate campaign, runs a campaign focused on right to work, prevailing wage, courts, talk radio, runs the grassroots thing, and wins easily. It kind of shows you that it's not all about money sometimes. You've got to connect with people, and having talk radio in your corner in a low turnout race, a very low turnout race, is a very big thing in southeastern Wisconsin. I mean, there were a few votes in that race. He won 68%. He does have a write-in Democratic candidate on the ballot or that's registered for April.
On April 7th.
There is no chance that he's going to win. Dewey Strobel is next state senator for the 20th district.
That's probably the most Republican district in the state?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Mixed.
Scott Walker, it's a yin and yang of like the national stuff is going well. The local stuff is kind of not so hot. I mean, look at locally. He's got what going on. Now they're doing right to work, even though he didn't want it. Now he's getting on board. There's all these things happening. There's the march on the Capitol. The troopers' contract is blown up by lawmakers. It's difficult to govern when you're out in New York courting these 60 conservative economists and members of the media about your vision. He met with Donald Trump this week. He's building the campaign. I mean, another fascinating thing is all the stuff about him not having a degree. You've seen conservative media rally around Scott Walker for the last week, like as a punchback, if you will, on this criticism, saying, wait a second, we like this guy. Now, they're not all unified in like that Scott Walker's the next nominee for president, but for Republicans, but they are defensive of him when he gets attacked like this.
Yeah.
The evolution thing, he's bounced back from that. So lots of stuff that you're seeing where he's getting his footing nationally, but he also has things like immigration, where he went on Fox News this week and said, this paper misquoted me about immigration a few years back.
When he was county exec.
Even when governor, I think Wausau paper about amnesty, they call it, a pathway to citizenship. Paper comes back, no, here's the transcript of what you said. There's past things he's done when he's been county exec and as governor, where he's signaled an interest, if you will, or an openness about a pathway to citizenship. Now he's saying no. Yep. It's kind of a classic Scott Walker. We're trying to thread a needle, if you will. You've known covering him. Sometimes you catch him in a spot where he's a little stuck, and he sticks with a message and he will not let it go. He's very good message discipline. And this is a case where he's picked his answer, and there are a couple of things that make it go, well, maybe the answer's not quite correct, if you will, or the whole truth and nothing but the truth.
And then falling?
Tammy Baldwin. The VA scandal will not go away. Now we find out that the aide who was fired from mishandling the report is thinking about a lawsuit. She's rejected the offer of a settlement. For Republicans now have gone to the Senate Ethics Committee and filed a complaint saying she's misappropriated taxpayer money. I mean, for a freshman senator, you don't want to have something like this happening, number one. Number two, for Republicans, they want to make it stick. They know that she's not well-known right now. It's common for freshman senators not to be well-known. They're going to try and make this kind of dirty her up, if you will, knowing that she's got to go back in front of voters in 2018.
Yeah.
If you can damage her now, maybe it'll stick. Now, she has time to recover, But she's brought in a big-time Democratic attorney to help her kind of turn things around, answer these questions. It's just not going away yet. Maybe there's a path forward now that is not going away just yet.
And the news just keeps on going. Yes. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
And that's Rewind. And I think next week we'll be talking about RTW, Right to Work. Thanks, Jack.